And welcome to the Taylor Report. And today we're going to be talking to Paul Rusesabagina, who is the subject of the film Hotel Rwanda. He was played by, I remember seeing Don Cheadle, the actor. And also, Paul is the author of a book, An Ordinary Man, his autobiography. Paul was in Rwanda, April 1994, and lived through the terrible events known to the world as the Rwandan genocide. And during those events, Paul Rusesabagina was distinguished for doing the right thing, very much at the risk of his life. Paul, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Phil. It's my pleasure.
Well, it's very good to talk to you. Your country, Rwanda, seems still, 20 years after the war and massacres, to be a very troubled place. And I guess the first thing I'd like to ask you, we find ourselves with the president of the country, Mr. Kagame, is indicating that he might violate the Constitution, such as it is, and try to continue on. Could you give us your assessment? What has it been like during the years of Paul Kagame's rule? And what about this decision he's considering of continuing in power?
Well, the Kagame's rule. Since Kagame took over in 1994, I was in the country, and I'm one of the eyewitnesses, one of those people who saw what was happening. How RPF, the Kagame's army, was tying people from the back, beating their chests, breaking them, and throwing them, and then throwing those tired people, putting them into containers, and dying there. So they were taking those dead bodies, going to burn them, and throwing their ashes into the national park. We saw many politicians being assassinated, trying to go into their home around 6 in the evening, which was not too late, 6, 7. We saw many people being put into prisons in hundreds of thousands. And we saw the Kagame government has done a lot of disasters. So I wouldn't be surprised to see someone who has completely stopped any political space allowed, a pure, simple dictatorship. There is no human rights. There are human rights abuses every now and then, everywhere, all over the country. There is no freedom of media. There is no freedom of association. So this man, I can't see him leaving, because he has also, as everybody, the whole world knows, he has followed the refugees into the Congo, has massacred more than 300 Rwandan Hutu refugees within the Congo forest between 1996 and 2003. Do you see such a man who is accused of war crimes against humanity, and even crimes of genocide, according to the UN mapping report? Do you see him leaving power? He survives because he's hanging on that small rope, which is called power. The very day he leaves the power, we know that the French judge has indicted him. So the French justice will be also looking forward to getting Mr. Kagame also in court. We know that the Spanish judges also have indicted him. Well, the very day he's no more covered by his presidential immunity, Mr. Kagame will be finding himself in Spain. The International Criminal Court also did not indict him because he's still protected by his presidential immunity. Mm-hmm. How can we imagine such a man leaving power? Mm-hmm. I don't see him leaving power in a peaceful manner.
Mm-hmm. That's a certainly seems to be a consensus of opinion that the way he holds power, and as you describe it, it's a very narrowly based regime that he's running. It'd be extremely perilous for him to step away, and of course immediately it would be issues of who would be able to take over. I want to ask you, just to follow on your point about the fact that he entered his neighbors, Zaire, and of course it was transformed into Congo, and they invaded twice. Now, right at this moment, we're facing news that there is a contemplation of intervention into Congo, East Congo, in pursuit of an organization known to the world pretty much as FDLR. Now, as my understanding is, his explanation would be, and the UN explanation for this intervention would be, that these are genocidaires, and that they have to go and hunt them down, as they did in 1996 and 1998. What do you think is going on in Eastern Congo, and of this campaign that people are talking about?
I believe that what is going on in Eastern Congo is, and once again, a total failure on the international communities. And according to the Rwandan, following to the Rwandan genocide, in 1994, we saw the whole world running away, pulling out from Rwanda, and without witnesses, Rwandans killed Rwandans. Both armies killed innocent civilians all over the country, wherever they passed. Killers were killing. The RPF was also massacring people all over the way. Today, the international community has kind of sponsored another mass massacre, which is now being done by today's Rwandan army. So, now, the international community, the UNHCR, United Nations High Commission for Refugees, about 6-7 months ago, they took time and kind of do a census of Rwandan refugees in the Congo. Those refugees, according to their numbers, were around 250,000 people. Today, they are talking about 1,400 FDLR as just a pretext, a good reason to attack the refugees again. They are running after 1,400 or 2,000 people. So, how can an international community decide to attack militarily and 250,000 innocent civilians, mm-hmm. sick people, weak people, the old people, those women, children, go in, kill them? Is the international community unable to go into the camps and get hold of those who are accused of having committed the genocide, take them to justice? That is an international community's duty, rather than condemning just in a global way, 250,000 people. So the international community, once again, is failing, pretending to be looking for FDLR people who do not exist almost mm-hmm. anymore.
Mm-hmm. And this point about the refugees, and you, of course, experienced this in your own family, yourself, and we know there is a diaspora of people who have escaped the grasp of this regime and are exercising their right as refugees or attempting to, but they're always under an onus, aren't they? It's difficult for Rwandan refugees, wherever they are in the world, they are treated, first of all, like suspects, and then second, as refugees. Isn't that right?
Well, Rwandan refugees, Phil, have never been understood. They have never been understood, even today. When I hear the United States of America, the United Nations, the United Kingdom, saying that those refugees should go home, it is not further than, later than before yesterday night, that one of the most prominent businessmen a tycoon of Kigali, or the capital city, was assassinated with many other guys. They put his dead body into a Mercedes. And then with the people who were killed with him, they took a DMI, a Directorate of Military Intelligence truck, and it happened to hit his car, and they pretended that it was a Nazi dent. So, now we are taking people, refugees, from camps, knowing purposely that we are taking them to a lion or a leopard, which is going to eat them, to kill them immediately. We have seen a lot of dead bodies floating into the Kagera River. Crossing, we saw them in terms of dozens floating into Lake Rweru towards Burundi and the Tanzanian side of the Kagera. So now we are purposely sending people to in such an atmosphere of massacres. Mm-hmm. So once again, the United Nations are failing, because they don't want to sit down and solve the conflict. The conflict is never solved by force, because in Rwanda we have tried to solve our conflict by guns for the last 50 and more years. We have never succeeded. Mm-hmm. So I believe that today the best way to solve the Rwandan conflict is to bring the whole truth of all of those things that have been taking place, massacres, bring them to the table, talk about them openly. Kagame has been responsible. He should also be answerable to justice. If there is any other individual.
Indeed, there's a subject of impunity. He has had impunity from the beginning. I mean, I think you, among others, and I know the BBC in this past 6 months produced a documentary, quite compelling, that indicated that if you had a list of suspects for who ignited the 1994 genocide by shooting down the plane, the first suspect now would appear to be Paul Kagame himself.
Well, Kagame has enjoyed a total impunity. His army has invaded the Congo many times in different colors and different identities. Once he went in as the Rwandan army, pretending to be hunting for refugees, he left some refugees in Bukavu and Goma around Rwanda and went to look for them in Kinshasa. He moved Mobutu.
Yes, thousand miles
Mobutu
away.
Mobutu was his Rwandan enemy. Mm-hmm. He removed Mobutu and put in someone else. So, this same Kagame, when he was kind of kicked out of the Congo in 1998, after what I called the Second African War, he changed the identity and called himself his army, RCD Goma, went back to negotiate with the Congo. Kagame has gone into Rwanda as Umoja Wetu many times. Kagame has been, he's been in the Congo also as M23, as CNDP with the General Nkunda, mm-hmm. Rwandan leading the Rwandan army in the Congo. So he has killed millions. They're talking about humanitarians, not me, even me included, We are talking about more than 7 million people who have been killed in the Congo because of those wars, in a way or another. We are talking about hundreds of thousands of women and young kids, young girls, who have been raped. And so this man is enjoying a total impunity. And this will go back once again to our question number one. And I think, I don't see such a criminal integrated within the people enjoying his retirement. Do you see him?
Not from the picture you've given us. I would not think so. by the way, I want to tell our listeners, this is Paul Rusesabagina, and you know him from the great film Hotel Rwanda. He was portrayed by the actor Don Cheadle. Paul has a foundation. It's called the Hotel Rwanda Rusesabagina Foundation.org, and it is HRRFoundation.org. And Paul, there is this issue, and incidentally, it seems to be being talked about more openly now. The former Prime Minister of Britain, Tony Blair, has been what is called an unpaid special advisor. But don't you think that this has something to do with the impunity of Paul Kagame?
Well, you see, I can tell you, I have never understood how Mr. Blair, a former UK Prime Minister, can associate his name, his image, with the most criminal person of the 20th century. I can't understand Tony Blair.
There are many who wonder about him.
can you see him as a former UK Prime Minister with the most criminal ever? And happy and smiling?
There is, of course, a suspicion that Mr. Blair has profited tremendously from his associations with various powerful people. I think it was the Times of Britain wrote an article about him saying that he should not be using his office, the former office as Prime Minister, to try to assist rather nasty personalities in one country or another. It doesn't reflect well on Britain, for sure. This is Paul Rusesabagina, I'll remind you again. And Paul, I want to ask you, Mr. Kagame's had some problems in that several members, very high-ranking members of his government, have defected or gone into refugee status abroad, and there's something been revealed about him. I mean, he doesn't recognize borders when he looks for revenge. We've had the death of a man, I want to get your thoughts about him, Patrick Karegeya, who had been in charge of Rwandan intelligence, was a very high-ranking RPF figure. He and others, by the way, agree with you in terms of the portrayal of the president of Rwanda. But Patrick Karegeya was murdered, strangled about a year ago in South Africa. Can you talk about what you saw that this had occurred? What were your thoughts about Patrick Karegeya and the type of regime that would murder him in that way?
Of course, Patrick worked with Kagame, but not all the people who worked with Kagame agreed with him on each and every point. I've had many good moments to sit down with Patrick to listen to him. I have heard good words and advice from that wise man, late Karegeya, And since he disagreed with Kagame, and by the way, I would like to remind our listeners that with Kagame, you do not have to be a Hutu or a Tutsi. Whoever disagrees with him is an enemy, and enemies have got to be killed.
Mm-hmm.
So he had been hunting for him. He has been hunting for the former chief of staff, general chief of staff, Kayumba Nyamwasa.
Mm-hmm.
They tried even to assassinate him. Fortunately, he didn't die.
Mm-hmm.
But for Patrick, they happened to kill him. And we can never say it was someone else, because all the proofs we have shown us that it is the Rwandan envoys, the Rwandan so-called diplomats working in the Rwandan embassy in South Africa in Pretoria. They are the ones who killed him. Immediately, South Africa expelled them from the country, and in about 2 months, in April, we do not know the date yet, South African justice has been gathering proofs, and now the trial will start in 2 months, and in 2 months, we know where the truth is. But however, here I would like to recall that Kagame was not the only one who was killed in exile. Because the former Minister of Foreign Affairs, Fred Sendashonga, was assassinated by RPF army in Nairobi, Kenya, Kagame's army. I would like to recall that Lizinde was also assassinated in Nairobi, Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Musabe was assassinated in Cameroon. Bugirimfura was assassinated in Kenya. Many others have been hunted all over the world. If they survived, it is not because Kagame loves them, but only they have not yet come.
And you yourself have been threatened, and you've had some incidents even in Belgium, is my memory.
Well, in Belgium, where I'm speaking from right now,
mm-hmm.
my house here, this house where I'm standing has been ransacked 4 times. They have broken everything.
Mm-hmm.
And happy enough, lucky enough.
Yeah, that's. I really hope that this registers with everyone that this is a regime that actually, out of the mouth of the president himself, no one can hide from him. He can do. He says he will find people. He really sounds like he's almost not entirely rational. This we're speaking to Paul Sabagina, and by the way, the foundation is HRRFoundation.org. And Paul, you must be taking some heart from the fact that wonderful people have come forward, like General Nyamwasa, Mr. Rudasingwa, and of course the late Patrick Karegeya, and that the possibility for a democratic Rwanda actually is right there, isn't it? I mean, it could occur. And for your comment, I'd like you to include the name Victoire Ingabire, a woman who remains in a prison simply because she wanted to run for office and be truthful.
Well, in Rwanda, the very day that you talk about power, that you talk about leadership, then you become an enemy. And as I said previously, an enemy is supposed to be killed. An enemy is not supposed to survive. So this is how Victoire, unfortunately, who thought that she could also campaign and become a president, why not her? went back to Rwanda from the Netherlands in 2010, believing that she would also campaign for the office of the president. And poor Victoire was immediately arrested, put in prison. She's now convicted to 15 years in prison. We believe that one day she'll be out. And this is what we are fighting for. And she's not alone. Mushahidi was in prison, is in prison with her. And another guy who was also Bernard Ntaganda was also in prison. Mm-hmm. And many others. Those are the most known people to the international community. Many other guys have been in prison, and some of them died even in prison. It is a pity to see what has been going on in Rwanda, and it is a pity to see some people like Tony Blair, as we said, and many other dignitaries entertaining such a dictator, a criminal. I have known Rwigara Assinapol, who was strangled and then put into his car, and his car was now completely kicked by a truck from the Kagame Intelligence. Assinapol was even a business person. Maybe because he refused to give money to a corrupt system, because RPF is the way they described a dictatorship when they said that it starts rotting from the head. So this is why you see some high-ranking people being assassinated in the Kagame regime.
Tell folks about the other. There's some myths about this country, and I know that among the people who've left there's been an economist. I can't say think of his name just now. His life was threatened in London. I think he's now living in Canada, as a matter of fact. But he says that it's just a legend about the so-called progress. Many people try to rationalize keeping Kagame in power based on the idea, well, look, there are now shiny buildings in Kigali, and that means everything is fine. What are your thoughts about the condition of that economy and what sort of economy it is?
Thank you for reminding me this. There is an important thing that those people who tend to believe in what Kagame tells them is the truth. All the statistics are made up. And this is Rwanda. And this is what the international community do not know, because they take all the numbers that Kagame gives them. Second, in Rwanda, I do not know whether people are very familiar with what they call the Potemkin village, which was used by the former Soviet Union. Today, Rwanda has got those villages, Potemkin villages, for sure. Kigali, for sure, shows development. Because all of those people who are employed, who have got everything, especially this tiny akazu, as they call it, or a small house, which does not fit for everybody.
Oh, yes, a small house, yes.
Which does not fit for everybody. That elite from Uganda, having no roots in the rural areas, they all of them gathered in Kigali, all of those warlords. So they, all the money, they looted from the Congo, the minerals, they built their homes, beautiful homes in Kigali, because they are leading everything. I do not know whether our audience is very familiar with what happened in 2008 on October 18th, when one man dreamed in the night And the following morning, this man, Kagame, came out with an idea that from that day onward, Rwanda was going to be an English-speaking country, and all of a sudden, we switched from French to English. So all the good jobs, all the best businesses now shifted to everything to the rules, that tiny group of English-speaking people from Uganda, the Basaja, as they call them, the Kagame people. So now they are the ones who live in the city, in the capital city. The rest of the French speakers, all Rwandans who are in Rwanda, whoever they are, Hutus or Tutsis, had no choice than losing their jobs and now going to the rural areas where people are miserable and they cannot eat two meals a day. So I think that those who say, who advance this economic miracle, economic performance, those are the people who are misinformed, because the Rwandan government shows them what they want, the Rwandan government wants them to see. This is what is going on in our country. It is too unfortunate.
And incidentally, some of this money that we're speaking of, my understanding is, and I think the author is Mr. Bismara, but the about 40% of the budget is actually is money comes from United States, France, and Belgium, if I'm right. England as well. But 40% of their budget actually is just given to them. Is that right?
Definitely. Rwanda is not a self-reliable country. And by the way, thank you for recalling Belgium, because about 2 or 3 months ago, the Belgian government had promised the Rwandan government that whenever they have a good human rights record, whenever they open the political space, they will be giving them a kind of bonus of 40 million euros every year. This year, the Minister of Cooperation stopped that donation because the Rwandan human rights records are very extremely poor. Mm-hmm. Political space, as Kagame said, he said that the political space is fully occupied. And when it comes to human rights records, do you remember what he told the President of Tanzania, His Excellency Mr. Kikwete? And when when Kikwete said that Rwandans, including the FDLR, should sit around the table, solve their conflict through dialogue rather than guns. Mm-hmm. Kagame warned him that he will wait for him in a corner. He will hit him, and he will know, Kikwete will never know what happened to hit him. So can you imagine a president telling another president those words?
He must feel he has impunity indeed to be able to behave like that. We've been speaking to Paul Rusesabagina. His book is An Ordinary Man, an Autobiography. The website of the Hotel Rwanda Rusesabagina Foundation is hrrfoundation.org. And Paul Rusesabagina, you are a man with a good human rights record. We're very glad to be talking to you. Thank you very, very much for sharing all with us.
Thank you very much, Phil. I'll talk to you next time.
Very good. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You are welcome.
And that was Paul Rusesabagina.